Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
The price of wheat in Chicago tumbles is the top end. And did the action this week from the corn and the bean pits signal the start of the postseason harvest rally? We'll talk about that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week, coming to you from the offices of F.C. Stone in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities in Hudsonville, Illinois, and Brian Maple of F.C. Stone in Indianapolis. Our thanks to Brian for so graciously agreeing to host today's program.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Gentlemen, let's start with this question. Are we into a postseason rally for the corn and the soybean markets? And we'll start with Brian Maple of F.C. Stone.
There's a real possibility we have started to rally, although I think we're going to run out of gas here pretty quick. The markets are totally driven, in my opinion, by a strong energy market and an extremely weak dollar. And I think that's mostly what's driving it. If you look at the markets here recently, we seem to be a little bit tired with these rallies. And I tend to think that if we get any kind of a break in the energies or we see strength in the dollar, we'll see these grain markets back off just a little bit.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, I have to agree with Brian. I think that that's a very logical way to look at things. The one thing that we will say where the rally has started, and we see the basis levels starting to pick up in the areas where harvest is winding down and also on the river and as far as the ocean freight that way. So I think that the post-harvest rally of the basis has started. We know we've seen the move up because of the dollar and the oil, and that's what we have to watch, unfortunately.
And Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities.
I would have to agree with both of these fellows. I think the rally, we could go farther up with corn and beans if the energies continue to go and higher. If the dollar would turn around and head back up, though, I would agree that they may have some trouble.
Let's stay in the corn pit for the day. December futures, a high this week at 374 and a half. They're low at 355 and three quarters. Settlement price at $3.72. They were a penny and three quarters higher from last Friday settlement price. December 2008 corn settled at 419 and three quarters, up 4.5 cents for the week. Should producers, farmers, owners of the crop be protecting next year's income at this point?
Well, Todd, we did another increment of hedging today at 420 on the December 08 corn. We think that there's, you know, this is a great place to start. If that's our worst sale for the year for our first 20% or so, I don't see where there's anything wrong with it. You know, we are very dependent on this gold, the dollar, and the energy price going on up here. You know, is this 20 cents we've increased in ethanol enough to kick our usage back up and take us on up another 40, 50 cents? Well, we hope so, because if we've only sold 20%, that's 80% we're going to get more for.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you need to protect some of that with the high fertilizer prices, the high ammonia prices, the higher cash rents. We can get locally, you can get January corn for 09 at over $4 right now. I think if you haven't made a sale, that's a good place to start.
And would you agree with them?
The only thing I would say is I'm a little slower, I guess, because I think we're out of whack right now. I think the beans have to – something has to change. The ratio between beans and corn, either beans are going to have to come down in order to drive corn down, or corn's going to have to go up a little bit, or we're losing too many acres. Because in my estimation, I think we've lost 8 million corn acres this year.
So which is your preference in terms of which direction you actually think will happen? Will the corn rally, or will the beans drop down to meet the corn price?
I think a little of both will happen, but I'm probably long-term a little bit more friendly corn myself. I think there's a lot of people around the world that need to resupply corn, and we're about the only game in town right now.
Anybody else have a thought on which one needs to go which way?
I don't know if you're going to see that big a drop in corn acres myself. Right now, corn still pencils out pretty good compared to beans for gross dollars per acre. The yields around home for beans were pretty low. Yields around corn for home were still pretty good. I mean, with the genetics in the corn, you can count on corn hanging in there pretty good. I don't know if you're going to get that big of a switch in acres.
Sherman, are you in the Lafayette area? Is that where you farm? Where do you farm?
Robinson, Illinois, Hudsonville, Illinois.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to peg you further to the north, simply because you'd be in the middle of a really good bean country if you were up in that Lafayette area, and that would have surprised me just a bit that you'd have a bean yield that didn't come in as good as maybe you had expected or to compete with corn in that area. But maybe down south where you are, corn would be in that direction. So let's talk a little bit more about the corn market. Where are you now on your new crop sales and your old crop sales?
Old crop sales, holding my last 25% yet to be sold. I had a lot of stuff sold coming into this thing, so I've got about 25% to sell. I've yet to sell any new crop corn at this point. I've got some new crop beans on the books, but haven't sold any corn.
You deal quite a bit with elevators and storage. Tell me what the infrastructure feels like to you now.
We're seeing the basis levels from the west to the east start to appreciate very quickly. Just for instance, here in the state of Indiana, you've got Frankfort and Lafayette both at 20 under and Decatur, Indiana at 45 under. And it's just going to continue to progress and pull these basis levels back up. But we didn't see the tightness that I thought we would see and driving basis extremely south. We just didn't see it this fall.
What is it about the corn market that you fear most over the next 3 months?
Well, I think two things, of course, would be dropping gold, crude oil, and the dollar rallying is the biggest thing. So the other thing we're going to talk about is acreage, the battle for acres and what we need. And I think that if we don't see the switch over, that could be very damaging to the corn price. If we would also lose some of the export market, you know, one of the things we talk about is oil's rising up on the Iranian-U.S. sanctions and talking about it. And I believe we've got 978,000 on the books with Iran right now. If they're mad at us, do you think they're going to take that? I don't think so. Are we going to push enough corn into ethanol? Are they going to get the transportation stuff worked out so we will use what we think we're going to? Is Florida going to actually get in and kick in and use it? Is California? You know, we don't start ethanol plants overnight. They take a long time. And we really slowed down when the margins went poor on the ethanol. So not as much there. And also, as we look at the bean oil, it's not profitable anywhere to blend bean oil at these levels to make soy diesel, other than the taxes are revoked, and that makes it a little better for the farmer that way.
Sherman, what are you hearing from your farmer friends, not only around where you live, but other places, when you talk to them on the phone across the Midwest about their decisions for planting? Have they made it yet? How seriously are they having to consider the change in cash rents? Is that going to become a problem with them at this point? And I guess what I personally heard is that those decisions are being held off longer this year than they have in the past.
Yeah, I think so. I think most of the guys still around home like to stay with a 50-50 rotation if they can. I don't know if they're waiting longer. The seed guys are out pushing the sales right now to get the triple stack bought and booked. I think these higher cash rents are coming at the guys quicker and harder than they expected. I mean, the guys are getting hit up by their landlord for more money because somebody else offered them more money, and they're saying, can you match this or be gone, basically. So they're worried, you know, about their farm ground for next year. They are getting locking in some of these prices, though.
Anybody worried about the agricultural economy over the next 2 years in a big way, or are we feeling that we're fairly stable at this point? Because the ag economy tends to run in a boom and bust cycle, and it tends to fold fairly quickly when the bust cycles come. Anybody have concerns about that at this point, or do we believe that ethanol as a driver and now maybe a base as opposed to a driver can maintain profitabilities on the farm?
I'm not sure that you ever get away from worrying about the ag sector. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, because now all the landlords see that the farmer's making all this money, and they've had a good year this year if they've sold stuff right. And cash rents come up, and you and I both know when you're taking economics back in college, we learned that basically everything's going to come to equality. And I'm afraid we run these prices up on cash rent, and then ethanol ends up failing on us 5 years down the road because cellulosic becomes away or something else comes in, and all of a sudden we can't afford to pay $250 an acre cash rent. So I am a little concerned about that.
Are farmers talking to you about growing their size of their operations and having smaller profit margins on the top end very much? Are they talking about what their exit strategies potentially if they're older farmers, growing their operations if they're middle-aged producers? Anybody care to take a stab at that one?
Well, Todd, I think that, you know, we can answer that question very plainly. Very few older farmers are looking to grow large now. They're looking at the idea they might retire a year earlier with the idea that they can rent their ground for $200+ an acre now that their appreciation in the farm ground they've owned for years is now a lot more money, and they have money to retire on and maybe sit back rather than buy that $250,000 combine or $500,000 combine. I screwed up there. It's a $500,000 combine now with the heads. I forgot about the inflation. I think the thing that we do have to worry about greatly now that we didn't worry about in the past is worldwide economy. And I say that in two reasons. We are getting very much pressured in the fertilizer industry. India, China is out there bidding against us for potash, whatever, along the way. The Russian mine that flooded yesterday, the Canadian Potash Corporation saying, we're going to halt, we'll honor all of our sales, but we're making no more new sales till we see where the price goes to. We're looking at the phosphates being very high. We're looking at the seed divisions, the chemicals, everything sort of being robbed away from us, if it can be, by the other growing nations. And I think that's the thing that we have to look at in these extra expenses. Unfortunately, we're just handling more dollars. The farmer isn't getting rich. He's getting 75 cents back on his dollar because that's what the dollar's worth now, and away we go.
Speaking of extra expenses, have you watched the price of natural gas and then looked at anhydrous ammonia? And does anybody have an idea why natural gas can be not so high, but anhydrous ammonia? I suppose it's just simple demand, but surely with natural gas prices lower, that you would think that anhydrous ammonia, which the primary input is natural gas, would follow suit, and demand certainly is not letting that happen.
It seems to be that, and I don't know whether that'll play out. I guess I'm in the camp of only booking a portion of my anhydrous for next year and seeing if we don't see that top come off as we move into next year is what I'm thinking.
I don't know if ammonia prices are going to come down a whole lot. I'm like Todd. It's hard to understand why natural gas is half of what it was, and you're still paying higher ammonia prices. Locally, we had to book some ammonia for $600 a ton. It doesn't look like it's going to get any cheaper from them because that's what they're going to have to pay later on.
Brian, there were a couple of tops in the marketplace this week. Maybe you can try to put both of them in perspective for me. They both had to do with oil, bean oil making a record three decades, in terms of a top this week. And then, of course, crude oil moving above $90 a barrel.
Yeah, the largest ever crude oil price. And I think it's just money. I think it's largely money coming into the pit that's driving that along the way. And I'm not sure we can hold it long term. When the bean oil, as you look at bean oil, to me, the food guys are going to get their oil. And they're going to make sure that these biodiesel producers are barely making money, if at all making money. And I think that'll continue to be the case. As long as crude oil goes up, you're going to continue to see bean oil go up and set new highs. And that's all I think there is to it. It's just trying to make sure that there's enough oil out here to feed the food industry.
But aren't the, in general, aren't biodiesel plants normally co-located with an oil processor for food oil simply because that's the most convenient and easiest way to put those two plants together?
They are, but I can tell you one that only works when it's operating at a profit. He shuts down when it's not operating at a profit. I think of this one up north in Indiana. I'm curious how they're going to make things work when they're looking at 41-cent oil. It just doesn't pan out to make biodiesel out of it. They'd be better off actually shipping crude oil out, or refined oil as it be, into the food marketplace rather than making biodiesel. Long term, you can't continue to run in red.
In Chicago at the Board of Trade, futures for the soybeans finished like this. The November had a high this week of $10.07. They're low at $9.61. Settlement price up 12 and a quarter from last week at $9.95.5. November next year settled at $9.71, and they finished down a half for the week. Tell me about the week in the bean market in Chicago. What were the most interesting things that you saw happen? Did it come on Thursday or Friday when we looked at hedge pressure coming out of South America or something else?
Well, Todd, Friday was the day that November options expired. There was 13,000 $10 options that were still open when we started the morning on Friday. And you saw the market go up for the people who were scared they were going over because they bought them on Thursday night. They bought them on Friday morning. And when they got covered, and by the end of the day, you saw us close back down below $10. And that was the main driving force of the day, along with the gold, crude oil, and the Dow Jones.
Where do you see the bean market headed from this point?
I think as long as the dollar stays down and crude oil continues to stay up and not completely fall out of bed, I think beans will probably be well supported. A lot of it will hinge on the South American weather. We're going to have a tight carryout projection, the way it looks. So unless, you know, as long as everything holds together, I think the beans can continue to march higher.
And your view of the soybean market?
It'd be pretty much the same. I think as long as the energy market stays strong, the dollar stays cheap, beans are going to hold in here fairly good. But I think we're kidding ourselves if we don't think we'll see expansion in South America. And I look for significant expansion in South America, and their job is to come in and take our export program away from us. So when it's all said and done, I look for U.S. exports to back off further down the road than what they have over last year.
What's that tell you about the bean market, that it will move lower as opposed to higher to meet that corn price like we talked about earlier?
Kind of keep in mind that corn rallied until we knew we had the acres bought. And in beans, you've got two crops, basically the U.S. crop and the South American crop. If we get to where we knew we bought the acres down there, we'll put a top in the bean market, in my opinion.
How quickly does that come?
Well, that's going to come between now and the first of the year.
And on this two-crop thing, and I'm not sure that farmers still have gotten used to thinking about two-crop and having a rally in the bean market when you've got a crop that's come in. A post-harvest rally is one thing, but a rally to gain acres is an entirely different thing. They've seen it happen the last couple of years. Should they be ready to pull the trigger on old and new crop sales as those dollars are generated to attract South American acres or hectares, as the case may be?
Well, Todd, that's a big question because we still think that there can be a rally during the February time period as to try to buy the U.S. acres that we know we need to add some acres here. We know we need to cut back on some of the corn acres or else we're going to be short in this country of what we feel. Now, as Brian so aptly put it, we will have a little buffer if we know that Brazil and Argentina have increased by, say, 10%, which we believe is a good possibility, rather than the 5 to 6% that they seem to be telling us now. So we won't have to bid up quite as much if they do that extra 4 to 5%.
And how do you throw China into this mix for soybeans at this point, or corn if you'd prefer? But that they have a fairly large soybean crop. They do a lot of pressing of oil in China. They have the Olympics coming up in Beijing, and they'll be wanting to feed poultry, I suppose, along the way so that they have plenty of meat for that economy that continues to move along at a fairly brisk pace.
I think as long as China has the demand, they'll keep importing the beans, and hopefully we'll keep exporting them to them.
In 2 minutes, we'll continue our conversation about the commodity markets.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a warm weather last weekend, it looks like fall weather finally may have arrived to stay in Illinois, but it certainly took its time. Temperatures this week still averaged above normal across most of Illinois, despite the autumn feel to the weather much of the week. Average daily temperatures ranged from near normal along the Mississippi River to about 3 degrees above normal along the Illinois-Indiana border. At this point in October, we are normally looking at highs in the mid-50s north to low 60s central to upper 60s in the south, with lows in the mid-30s to mid-40s. A wave of low pressure moving up the cold front that passed through Illinois on Monday brought heavy rain to the southeastern half of the state, which significantly helped the dry conditions there. 1 to 3 inches of rain fell across the region, with almost 4 inches in the far south. More light rain spread northward across Illinois late in the week as an upper-level low drifted northward from the Gulf states. Cool weather will persist through this weekend as high pressure settles in over Illinois. Winds will swing back into a southerly direction late Monday as the center of the high moves east, and that will usher in warmer weather. The warmer weather will last until Wednesday when a strong cold front will move across Illinois. Most of the week should be dry, although a few widely scattered showers may develop ahead of the cold front, especially across northern Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week, coming to you today from the offices of FC Stone in Indianapolis, Indiana. Our thanks to panelist Brian Maple for so graciously hosting this edition. Our other panelist in studio, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities from Hudsonville, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look now at the numbers from the wheat pit for the week. A high this week of $8.78 in the nearby December contract, $7.90 and a quarter, the low. Their settlement price right at $8 even, down 55 and a half cents from last week. July wheat settled at $6.77. They were down 15 and three quarters. The wheat pit was where most of the action was. I think when we talked to you on Tuesday of this week, you said something like for 9 weeks in a row, the wheat has either made a new, has rallied or dropped 30 cents. And this week it managed to do it twice rather than once. Did it surprise you?
Yes, it did, Todd. And for the first reason is since we've expanded limits, this is the first time that 2 days in a row a commodity has been limit down. And we did feel that maybe there would be some other factors that come in. And along with all the factors that are pulling the corn and the beans up, we thought it could maybe stabilize the wheat. But I think that most of the exporters are locked in for right now. We got the news that Russia is not going to kick up their tariffs. And along with that, we just see people saying they're looking at the charts, they're looking at how it's acting, and can we say a top is in? I think we can.
Sherman, you agree? Is the top in the wheat market?
I think it very well could be. Chart-wise, it looks like it could be. I know there's a lot of wheat, new wheat has been planted out there, especially in southern Illinois, southern Indiana. There was a lot of wheat that went in corn stalks. A lot of wheat went in on the bean stubble down that way. They tell me down there they're going to plant corn and wheat. So, if these guys start in here, get in here and plant that much wheat, they need to be getting some hedged.
When you take a look at the new crop settlement price off, 15 and three quarters this week at $6.77, a $6.77 futures market look like a pretty interesting place to market wheat, the extra acres that you might have put in yet this fall or already this fall?
I guess I think that you go ahead and sell it. How many times have you ever started selling new crop wheat at these kind of values? I think the calendar is working against wheat, in my opinion, because the further you go, I think Wayne actually already stated it, we're front-end loaded. We bought a big chunk of the wheat that these people need to buy, and the closer we get to these big harvest numbers for next year, the less and less value wheat has. We overdo it on the upside as well as we'll probably overdo it on the downside this time.
Are there enough acres across the planet to service the needs of the globe at this point? I mean, we've moved higher on some unique qualities in the marketplace. Ethanol drove things a bit higher. We've had weather problems with wheat across the planet. But really, do we have enough acres across the globe to meet our needs at some point? And what does that say about the price of grain? And I guess the question really is, across the board, have we reached a new plateau in which we will have a higher trading range than we have in the past for corn, soybeans, and wheat? And if you think that's the case, what might that plateau be? Would it be 280 to 380 corn? Are we looking at $8 to $9 beans or $7 to $9 beans? And I have no idea what to think about the wheat market at this point. Wayne?
Well, Todd, I think there's two questions to that. Number one, do we have enough acres? I think yes, if we have enough rain. look at our production loss that we saw in China, Australia, parts of Argentina, parts of the U.S. and whatever. Now, if we get back to having decent rains around the world, yes, we've got enough acres because we're going to pick up a lot of grain that way. If we continue to have the drought situation that we've been seeing over the past few years, you know, we were awfully dry and had just-in-time rains through the Midwest. And if we don't have those next year, no, of course we don't have enough acres as we go. Have we moved to a new plateau? I think Brian brought up a very, very interesting fact in that are we going to, in 3 to 5 years, get cellulosic ethanol producing? And if we do, then we're going to kick back and have the corn, and corn isn't going to have the value it does today. For the next 2 years or the next 24 months, I think we've moved to a little higher level than what we'd anticipated.
You know, Todd, all I'll say is I've heard twice in my however many years I've been doing this, 26 years, I think, that we've established a new plateau, and each time we've been dead wrong. And I tend to think that same thing will happen this time. Sherman was talking about genetics, and I think we'll see genetics over the next 5 years make tremendous strides from what I can gather. And all of a sudden, we end up with production that we outproduce our needs, is what I think.
Sherman, How big a stride do you think we'll really make? Have you listened to Rob Fraley at Monsanto talk very much about his babies, these genetically modified crops, the potential to put some drought tolerance in the corn starting not too in the too distant future? I think they're talking about the year, 2010 or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think we've made some great strides with the genetics, and I think they probably will here for the next few years. I think the national average, as long as we get the rain, will continue to go up. I believe it's there for the corn.
A final word from each of you, and we'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana.
Well, Todd, we've seen beans above $10 here this week. We saw corn rally up here, and we've seen over $4.20 for next year. And I think just, you know, as long as we can still be positive, but I think we've sort of hit the top of our trading range for right now. And unless the dollar really collapses, I think it's time to be watching your basis and get ready to sell when the basis narrows in your area.
Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, we've had some really good prices. I think you need to stay on top of your markets with the higher inputs. When you get a chance, go ahead and make some sales.
And Brian Maple of FC Stone.
I'm going to go with what Wayne said here, talking about basis. Basis is going to increase tremendously here over the next month and a half or so. You've got to look to take advantage of these basis levels on stored grains that you've got out here. And then I think also you take a hard look at these deferred values for new crops because they're all at levels that are very profitable levels. And don't totally let them get away from you.
Our thanks to our panelists today, and they are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, and a special thanks to Brian Maple of FC Stone for hosting us in his office in Indianapolis. We appreciate that very much. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can access this Commodity Week program and analysis throughout the week on demand on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, weekly analysis, cash grain reports, weather, and feature interviews with agricultural newsmakers. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.